get rolling. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Yet the symbol of the old empire still endured here, though this bronze monster had a heavy chain dangling from her talons, an open manacle at either end. The Harpy of Geese had a thunderbolt in her claws. This is the Harpy of Astapor. Welcome to the White Wolf Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitewolfpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners.
Say about that quote?
I don't know either.
The word Astapor in it.
Yeah, it does. But like, I don't feel like that's a probably shouldn't listen to George R. R. Martin right after he's reading David Foster Wallace. But I'm like, man, that's not good writing.
I mean,
I didn't go for anything particularly moving. I literally searched the word Astapor and just kind of came up with the best, you know, sentence that had Astapor in it. I'm not even going to say that's the best, because that was, you know, in, like, book one.
It just happened to have the word Astapor, and you were like, I need this now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now that I've got a Search of Ice and Fire, why not tie everything into the title of the chapter packs?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Plus, people get annoyed when we keep using the same, like, half a dozen quotes over and over that are actually good.
Mm.
So in 5 books and several thousand pages, there's a half a dozen good quotes.
Okay, it might be more than that.
I have opinions on this. We'll do an episode on it at some point, I'm sure. But
yeah. We need to do a novel episode at some point.
Okay.
I haven't read it in so long.
Well, okay. So in that case, this is episode 293 of the White Book. I'm Will, also featuring...
I'm Aaron.
Anybody?
Oh, I was going to say, are we supposed to say ourselves? I thought you were going to say our names. I'm Luke, by the way.
Nah, I figured it really makes more sense for you guys to introduce yourselves. You know, let's the listeners bond with you.
Do I even have a first name anymore?
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, I think Will's the only person in the whole community that ever uses.
No, Kristen calls you Aaron.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I call you
Aaron. So I always have to ask who she's talking about.
Do you?
Yeah.
Not on air.
No, because nobody would know who I was talking about.
Oh, that's a good point. Right. Our personas.
Okay.
All right, this was a really boring side. I'm sorry. My bad.
Man, our banter is decidedly unbanterous.
Well, all I'm thinking about right now is, like, literary theory after having read that. Yeah. So, let's screw the rest of this. Let's just talk about cards.
There we go. Let's just jump right into the chapter pack. We've got the fall of Astapor.
Is this is the fall of Astapor or the fall of Arbanter? They're all going to be that good, guys. Enjoy.
The fall of language in itself.
Oh. That's
The fall of Cafefe?
Ooh.
Or however that may be pronounced.
Whatever. You know, I think listeners will get the idea.
Yep. Okay, so in that case, let's get rolling with the chapter pack.
Wow, that was, we're gonna review that was it? The worst intro that we've ever done.
It was bad. Thankfully, it was short.
Yes, but you were not listening, or when it was just Will and Kyle, and Kyle would just make weird noises for the whole intro. It was so weird.
That's true.
Kind of like how Brian just like loudly crunches chips in the middle of Brandon's intro on Cardboard of the Rings, Will.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Or once I literally listened to what's his name? Shoot, now I'm trying to remember. Australian guy. Urinate during an episode. That was exciting.
Other podcasts. Okay, so who wants to have to review how we do these reviews since our last episode was a review? Well, not the last
one. No, there will be an episode before, in between. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's pretty simple, dear listeners. We're on an A through F scale. We recently added an E specifically for combo cards, but everything else, combo are like silver bullet kind of meta cards. Anyway, everything else is the U.S. grading scale. There we go. See?
And if you're not from the U.S. and don't get that, just consider yourself lucky. You probably have a real world lead.
Yeah. So, okay. Should I? I'm willing to follow on that sword for start.
Yeah.
No one else.
I'll suck it up for Nice Watch.
Okay. All right. Here we go. We've got Roaming Wolfpack. It's a non-unique, non-loyal, 6-cost start character. It has 6 strength and a military icon, the Direwolf trait, Intimidate, no attachments. And while Roaming Wolfpack is attacking, each attacking Direwolf character gets +2 strength. And then they also get an event, the North Remembers. This is a 2-cost loyal. And it challenges action. Each player sacrifices a character or location. And reaction, after a character you control is killed, pay 1 gold to return the North Remembers from your discard pile to your hand. You know, my initial thoughts are Roaming Wolfpack is pretty bland, but after being on the receiving end of a lot of Intimidate from Robert and Victorian in unison this past weekend, I can at least see some potential application here. But the event, now that's the sort of thing that gets my like Shaga gears turning, you know? Because everybody doesn't have to actually have the character or location to play this on like something like Evenhanded Justice. So, you know, I think there's probably some character light decks that might be interested in trying this out. Or at least it could get pretty fun in Melee.
Right. Do you want to explain why they don't have to have an eligible target?
Because it doesn't use the word choose.
Right.
Yeah, so it's only affecting the player. It doesn't the player does the thing and doesn't choose an object to do the thing to, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they totally do in actuality, in real life English, choose a character location to do the thing to. So they don't choose in game lingo, but in real life, if they don't choose, the whole game stops. Forever.
Well, and then you call the judge for delay of folly.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, this is a bad thing to do after we're thinking about English all day. I'm just saying.
I agree.
Game language is a pain.
It's just it's just a dialect.
So who wants to tell me the biggest problem with Roman Wolfpack?
It's non-unique and it costs 6 and it's a dire wolf.
Exactly. I was going to go with the fact that it doesn't have a second icon. If it had 2 icons, I think it's still worth it for sure.
None of the direwolves are ever getting another icon.
No, they won't.
It's that it's non-unique with 6 cost. Like, if it were unique, I could see running it because Great Hall would make it four, and if you're just trying to get that cost curve at that spot and run like a bunch of one ofs at that, like, yeah, I'll pay for six for, you know, model kind of sensitivity can be really strong, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, because it's basically intimidating at that point every single time.
Yep.
But without being unique, it's just too expensive. Like, it's not unique, it's not loyal. It's functionally unaffordable, which sucks, because otherwise it would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's going to break the North Remembers, though.
Dude, the North Remembers, I think, is pretty solid.
Like, if you have six golden, like, a really big board, just play three of these.
I just, like, I don't even really care about the recursion, really. I mean, like,
oh no, me neither.
The,
but
one,
no, like,
the one time that you do this where you can really leverage it, I mean, this is something that Stark needed. It's like something to do that's in hand in the challenges phase.
You want to know what would be cool? Like, you Valor, and then you play, whatever 3-3-1 is. I know it's first game, kills all the locations but two.
Political Disaster.
Yeah, yeah, then you play Political Disaster. And you're like, you have two locations and a couple dudes, and now I'm just going to play a bunch of North Remembers. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, your board would probably be pretty small, too. But if you could run a cheap enough curve, that should be.
Yeah, I like
then
it.
I think Stark's got some options at that low curve spot. I mean, they've got some really nice uniques down at that bottom end of the curve, too.
Banners tend to exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah,
and
so
they even have a little bit of recursion, some benefits for stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, yeah. If you're using this as an enabler for Cat or Rob or something, then you know, the more the merrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I'm all about it.
So
North Remembers.
I agree with Aaron. Someone's gonna bust it eventually. So yeah, I think Stark for me overall probably gets like a B plus out of this pack. Mainly on the back of the North Remembers.
See, I think Stark gets like a C+, because I think the North Remembers is like pretty strong now, might be absolutely hilariously bonkers later. Roaming Wolfpack is terrible.
Roaming Wolfpack's a B, and the North Remembers is probably a B, so I'm going to go C+. Maybe B-. I'm going to go B-, because intimidates.
Ooh, we've got an actual spread in ratings this week. I like this start.
Oh. Yeah, no Roy screwing everything up. That's what that was.
Yeah, he's just too agreeable.
Makes us all agree. He's like, guys, can't we compromise?
And then we're all
Bernie was the best choice. It's okay.
Well, and he always sets the tone because we make him read the Stark cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone has to like Stark. All right. You love Tyrell, man.
Okay. I get Eleanor Tyrell. She is a 3-cost, 3-strength. Non-loyal Tyrell character with an intrigue and power icon, the Lady trait. And her game text is, you may marshal or play one additional limited card each round. Yeah. Arbor dupes.
And
Silver Hair?
And then Silver Hair Net.
Yep.
It is a 2-cost non-loyal attachment. Is it unique? I think it's unique, isn't it? No, it's not.
It is not.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Attached character gains stealth, because that's what Tyrell needed. While attached characters participating in a challenge, reduce the cost of each event you play by one. Interesting.
Dude, I might play three of that.
Yeah, dude. Non-unique, like, just Tyrell give the Tyrell character stealth.
Like, hey, that makes Old Bear's Crow or Old Bear's Raven look really fucking bad, right?
Yeah. The lady and that Lani only, attachment?
The lady character only is tough, because I'm on Thrones DB, and the text in the little preview is not the same as on the card art. It's lady character only, and it's an item trait. So, it's not quite as good.
Even so, like, that doesn't only go on Tyrell cards, right?
Right.
Like, if you play Tyrell Wolf, for example, like, I'll take 100 stealthy ladies. That seems like a good thing,
because
that deck is really weak to Greyjoy, and that would basically solve that problem.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I mean, and it even just helps in like power gain. You know, if you're just going balls to the wall, you know, I was already playing Tyrell, or sorry, Greyjoy Rose.
What is, I was
going to
say,
I might add this.
But why does it help with power gain? Just stealth or the reduction of event costs?
Yeah. Mainly stealth, but the event costs.
So the reduction of event doesn't do anything for you.
No.
If you knight someone.
You guys are both missing the point. Just having an attachment is good against
armor. True.
Yeah.
Because the 2-drop event, I don't know if anybody, Dragon is no slave, is no attachments. So is the, the plaza. Yeah, like, yep. That's actually a really good way to, like, kind of say bite me to those two, right?
Yeah. Eleanor is fine. I think her cost slot's a little weird. And I think Tyrell has so many good, like, sixes and twos that I don't know that they really care about the 3-cost slot all that much. But she's fine. I don't think she's bad whatsoever. She has a positive trait. She's non-loyal. If you stick her in a deck, she's going to be one of, right?
I don't know. I'm going to be
Yeah, I think that's probably true. What'd you say?
Wait, you would run to it. You should not run to it.
Well, depending. Okay,
cost unique is bad.
Yeah, well, 2-for-3 cost unique with a burn in the meta is a particularly bad idea. Unless it's Marjorie. That's obviously a special case. Mm-hmm. Maybe Marjorie, who never has to be in a challenge.
Right. True.
But, like, that's
it. I don't know that I necessarily want Eleanor in a challenge, but...
Yeah, but yes, but once she's on the board, you're going to challenge her. You're not just going to use it there.
Yeah. I mean, if you're that Maybe scared not, of losing but... Eleanor, if you're that scared of losing Eleanor, then you're probably in a bad spot.
Yeah. Well, I don't really think I would be, but I think I think she really gives Tyrell a leg up in just dropping piles of income on the board. I mean, they already have, like, income available,
but
the limited really kind of can gum that up. I've definitely been in turns where I'm, you know, already dropped a Rose Road, and then I drop a Pleasure Barge and draw a King's Road or something, and I'm just like, And I don't know. I think they've already got so much draw and so much income that this is a tool I really like the idea of to kind of break the limiter on leveraging that. So
it's just crazy.
I'm interested to try it out.
It's just crazy how well Tyrell and Stark play together. Yeah, like as both main faction and as banners.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I give Tyrell.
It makes no thematic sense.
Like there's
like yeah, they have no connection.
Not even really.
The only connection like, that
the
they
only
have
houses
is Sansa and Court,
sense.
Right?
Yeah, I guess
that's
for like a second. And then, in fairness, Baratheon actively hates Greyjoy, and they're built to work together.
Yeah, that's fair. They do really, shoehorn those together, don't they?
It's like not Night's Watch, which would be thematic. Greyjoy.
I think Tyrell gets a B+. I'm not quite ready to give them an. I think they get a B+ because I just don't know Tyrell main house. Especially if you're playing mono faction, you're probably playing Lord of the Crossing at this particular moment, or even Summer maybe, and you're playing a lot of Rush. And I don't know. Eleanor's fine, but I don't know that Silver Hairnet squeezes its way in with event slots being tight already. And then you're wanting to get your crown and your bodyguard. I don't know. I think they get a B+ just because I think these are two like fine cards that could find their way into decks, but I don't know if people will actually start building around them.
I'm going to give him a B, just because I don't think either of these cards are really close to A cards, but they're both cards that are good and he's having. Like, Eleanor is one of them in the deck, then Silver Hairnet is, like, if you run it, it just makes sense to play mm-hmm. deck.
Yeah, that's why I said
I think it's a fairly specific deck, but I think that's it. So I think that merits a B.
I think B sounds pretty reasonable. I feel like these two cards are maybe pushing towards a more control-y oriented Tyrell build instead of just kind of the balls to the wall rush, which I like. So yeah, B sounds reasonable at the moment.
Does Silver Hairnet make Olenna's Cunning like even remotely more palatable?
I'm gonna go with remotely, but instead I would like to look at free Tears of Liss.
Mm-hmm,
what is it? Renly's Ride.
Well, I've just been seeing
Offer of a Peach, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been seeing Tyrell Fealty across Europe a little bit here in the last month or so, and so I'm just genuinely curious.
Oh, you've been seeing it as you travel Europe?
No, I mean, just like I've been creeping on Jousting Pavilion and stuff, and on the Anals, well, and you know, you see that every once in a while, so I think that's interesting.
Creeping into the States too, won Tulsa over the weekend.
Yeah. And then,
ready for next watch?
I was gonna say, sorry. You said you were gonna do that.
I mean, mm-hmm. I guess unless someone else wants it, you want me to do Baron. Lil gets Lenny.
Hey, I already fell on the Stark sword, so I think it's your turn with Night's Watch. All
right. Recruiter for the Watch is a 4-for-2 intrigue icon, loyal Night's Watch character. It's got the Wandering Crow trait, which that seems necessary. You may choose to stand, or you may choose not to stand. Of the Watch for the standing. Marshalling action. New recruiter for the Watch to choose a character that costs 2 or lower. Take control of that character until recruiter for the Watch stands or leaves play. Then, Underground Vault. Night's Watch loyal costs 2 the North, limited. Kneel Underground Vault to gain 1 gold. 2 gold instead if the gold value in a multi-reel block guard is 5 or higher. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Would sure. a Rose Road count yep. as gold on a plot? Yeah, it would.
Yep.
Yeah.
All modifiers on cards add to your plot value.
Well, so it's high win.
Yep.
Or that, yes. Right, because that's basically... And
stone, like, there's stone no drum.
Anything with that gold finger. Symbol on it.
Stone drum, too. Stone drum specifically says there's a kingdom plot card, then you add one to your value on your plot card.
Okay, so I guess the gold icon is just shorthand. It's not a hard one.
Right. I think this is playable, but I'm not sure. Like, I think it's playable because Night's Watch is desperate for this kind of in-house economy. Like, Fealty at the very least. But I'm not totally sure. Oh, hey, does Kings of Summer affect this?
Yes, ooh. Because Kings of Summer says for if you have a summer plot and there's no winter plot cards revealed, you raise the value on your revealed summer plot card by 1.
So then, in that case, this has 2 homes. It's Fealty and indefinitely summer. This is actually really good. It means Night's Watch doesn't ever really want a banner anymore, I think. Mm-hmm. But whatever, I guess. They mostly stand alone anyway. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Except Baratheon and Stark. But whatever.
The idea of Night's Watch bannering in the first place is kind of silly.
Yeah, well, they don't really have a banner, but yeah, okay. I'm struggling with this. Like, I mean, it's nowhere near as good as the one we're going to talk about in a little bit, or the Targ one. It seems better than the Greyjoy one.
I think it's totally
the more reliable. Yeah, the more reliable economy that Twitch gets, just the more annoying here, because, as I've stated earlier, seems to realize all their draw is like their combo setup so stupidly.
Why do you think you're the only one that thinks that?
Because when I'm like, man, those crows are a problem, I was like, nah, man, they cool.
No, Messenger Raven is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's very new. Only mildly limited by reserve, and then give the reserve modifier.
And all you need, just Castle Black plus Samuel Tarly. Good luck.
Yeah. Underground Vault is going to be good, mm-hmm. probably not great, probably not broken, except that context matters, so it might be great or broken in context. And Recruiter for the Watch is a good card. I don't know if it's a great card. I feel like Dan might break it or something, but, like, it's a good card.
I think that I agree with you 100%, although I'm starting to get really worried about all the take control effects. Like, it's one thing to give a sub-theme to a house that has, like, an established identity of, like, defense and, like, and then you want to make this the sub theme, the recruitment thing. And it's another thing to have like four straight like sets where you just give them tools to fuel that. And like, I don't like playing my cards and then just like seeing them on the other side of the table. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if like they get killed or they get like returned to hand or discarded by interesting effects or whatever. I don't like just like seeing my opponent play a card and just go, yeah, that's mine now. He may not be good now, but it might be insane.
Feel bad for sure.
Yeah, it might be insane. It might be insane later. Who knows? It's fine now, but it could be nuts later.
I think the issue is ultimately that, like, if there's too many of these, take control of the low character. Just, you know, because effects. If you cut, like, if their redundancy hits that, then your opponent will have nothing.
Right, and then it's dumb.
Yeah, that's a good recipe for losing.
Yeah,
it's dumb. I don't think they're at critical mass yet, but I could be proven wrong.
I'm not saying that I know for sure or that like I've tested this deck archetype enough, but man, it could be pretty gross.
Yeah. I think it could get there. I think it's interesting looking at something like the Recruiter for the Watch. I do feel like it leans, in my mind, a little more towards the kind of aggressive Night's Watch build when you've got a repeatable effect like this to keep taking their claim soak, push through a military with Ghost or whatever, and then follow up with a march to ditch the character that you took and something else from their board and then just keep using the Recruiter every time they play something applicable.
Mm-hmm. Fallen from Favor works too.
Yeah. Yeah. Great call. So I mean, I think it looks really, really solid there. And the, like Aaron was saying, the Underground Vault is just kind of, by necessity going to be a kind of go-to income location for Night's Watch. What that level of income is really going to mean for them, I guess we'll see, but I think it's going to be good for their faction, even if everyone else doesn't enjoy it. So I think Night's Watch came out awfully good in this pack.
Aaron, you read the cards. What do you give them?
A-. I think that either card is an A in of itself, but given their house, what others leave it at, they're A minus.
I think I'm in the same boat. I think the economy location alone puts them in that range, and then I think my general disposition to fear cards like Recruiter for the Watch pushes them up there.
Well, I'm torn. I thought we were going to have a little bit of a spread in ratings early in this episode, but I think, yeah, these are two very strong options for them, and in context, I think Aaron's A is appropriate.
So, can we just mention that the problem with Night's Watch design is they're either completely unplayable or completely unfun?
Yeah.
Well, like, because there's no way to, like, defense is never going to be fun for the opponent.
Right.
Either just getting your shit stolen. So, like, it's either that's just bad and no one plays it, or it's no fun for anyone. That's probably a bad design for literally an entire faction.
Well,
Yeah, not a great space.
I mean, well, like, there's structural problems that make Night's Watch a problem, right?
I mean, there's a lot of problems with this whole idea.
Like, they're probably not fighting for the throne. Is that what you were talking about?
Well, that's a thematic concern. Like, right, no, I'm thinking, like, structurally, like, in terms of the game itself, like, they actually, like, actively break a huge, like, design philosophy, which is that big, important characters matter, and, like, none of their dudes matter. And so, like, they do not care about resets, they do not care about, like, economy, they have awesome card draw.
They do not care about Green Eggs and Ham.
They just, seriously, man, like, you can just recite that passage and just, like, insert, like, 2.0 design philosophy here, and Night's Watch doesn't care about it at all. yeah, that's an issue, but, you know, I can rant on that, like, some other time.
Yeah, that's good segment for an entirely different episode. But I'm game to come back to it.
We'll have to have a whole, like, bitch about FFG episode. Even though I really love... I will say, though, like, in like, defense of the game in general, I'm having more fun playing Thrones right now than I have in a long time, so...
Yeah, there's more decision making, more design space. I still don't think the game is in a good place, but it's in a better place. I think it needs... And, hey, I haven't been on in a while, so I haven't mentioned in a while. But I think the game still wants the Pale Mare pretty bad.
I think that we need to have that for another episode, because I think that might be next week. Yeah. Well, that might be next week.
Okay. We can get that figured out for now. Let's keep rolling with the chapter.
That's next week, yeah?
Sure. Okay. Who's up on Barrow?
I just want you to commit to it. That's all.
I think it has to be
Luke. Yeah, that's me. Unless you want to switch and you can take Barrow and I'll take Greyjoy, because I know you hate Greyjoy.
Oh god, I extra hate Greyjoy. Can I have Targ though?
Yeah, that's fine.
Actually, you can have Targ. I'll take my cool. I prefer my Targ.
Okay.
Alright, deal.
Alright, so I'll take Greyjoy, you take the Barrow cards.
Alright, so Fleet, two in a row. Fleet Bottom Bastard. House Barrow, non-loyal, 2-for-1, intrigue, power, bastard. During balance phase, Fleet Bottom Bastard gets +3 strength. That's the most boring goddamn card in this pack, no? Spears of the Merlin King, 1-cost, loyal, location. Westeros, interrupt. When a character you control is killed, sacrifice Spears of the Merlin King to return that character to your hand instead of placing in your dead pile. Fleet Bottom Bastard is a pile of trash. Like, that's just boring, I guess. I don't know what they're doing. And Spears of the Merlin King is at least loyal, because it might be broken.
Oh, that card is so good.
Yeah, that card is, like...
The card is insane.
Barra only cares about, like, 3 guys, and giving them a save is good. And then, like, hey, Barra Greyjoy with 6 1-drop saves.
Oh, hey, guess what, dude? It doesn't matter if it's cannot be saved.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, now, you know, any power on the character is gone. Terminal attachments are going to go.
I just love having my Mel back in my hand. That's all. I would much rather have her there than in the dead pile.
Well, even aside from that, I'd like, with 3 of these, I might run more than 1 Shireen just because it's worth it for me to eat her as claim soak. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like, Barra wanted a card like this. I think it's really cool. Although the interaction with Barra Kraken is kind of silly, like you mentioned, Aaron.
Like, and then you've got Victarion in there for his, like, natural save, and you can just throw bodyguards in because everyone important is a lord or lady, and you're just like, oh. Like, and since you have the Great Hall, you can also just run Barristan and Shrug. Be like, I'm just gonna save people. This might be enough to make Barra good. Because Barra's not good, despite whatever that dude who's amazing in California does. Barra's bad.
But okay.
This card may be I don't know, but this card might be enough to make him.
Didn't Barra just win the Dutch Nationals too? Or not the Dutch Regionals? I think Barra did win. Just win the Dutch regional.
Yeah, I don't think Barra's in as bad a spot as Aaron is making it out to be. But I definitely agree that this is a huge card for that.
I think that in North America, Barra's in a pretty tough spot.
Did Bambi win with
it?
Oh, I like Bambi. I'll talk to him about that. Maybe Barra's not that bad. I don't think Barra's great right now, but whatever. I think Barra's just weak to rush.
It is. Barra also cries,
which is weird because Neil was kind of traditionally the answer to Rush in first ed.
The problem is Neil in second edition, like, it's built around a centerpiece character. There's other tools for the centerpiece character that makes it all go.
Right. The only two non-Melisandre Neils are Consolidation of Power and Even-Handed Justice. Right. Like, those are the only two ones, and those.
Well, the two cost Neil a shot. Well, but yeah.
Yeah, and Stinking Drunk, I would say, kind of counts.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true.
The Sandy Guard got it.
Yeah.
A Sandy Guard.
I'm
going to put a Sandy Barnabas on your Tywin.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that card beat me at Gen Con.
Is there a card called Vomit? Because then I would just put that down.
Oh.
That's mean and true. Flea Bottom. So, any other thoughts about these two? Or are you right?
I'm just waiting for like a bastard agenda, so I have a real reason to play all the bastards that Bear's getting. Like, I like the nice little thematic nod, but they're just filler cards, which I accept have to happen at some point in some houses. Yeah. So, I just want the agenda to tie them all together. I don't know what it'll do, but I'm waiting for
it. I do want a reason to play bastard characters. That is interesting. Maybe like an agenda that just focuses on bastards and companions.
Yes. Love it.
I don't know. What are we giving Barra here?
I mean, A plus and F, so E.
I don't know.
I'm gonna go.
I think that Barra still comes out as an A minus just because Spears of the Merlin King is so dope. And like, who gives a shit about Flea Bottom Bastard? If you're a Barra player, you buy this pack and you just exult.
Is Spears of the Merlin King unique?
It is not unique.
Yeah, dude. This is an A minus pack.
I thought I was seeing that. Yeah.
This is an A pack for Barra. The amount of impact that the Spears gives them is huge.
Welcome back, Barra Fealty.
Yeah.
All right, Will, you got the Lannister cards.
Okay. Sends us to Lannister. Now this is exciting. well, or at least one of these is. Okay, so first up, we've got Cersei's attendant. She's a 2-cost non-unique but loyal Lannister character with 3 strength and an intrigue icon, that lovely companion trait.
This card is angry.
While Cersei's attendant is participating in a challenge against an opponent with no cards in his or her hand, Cersei's attendant gains insight. We'll come back to you, Cersei's attendant. Then we also get Fever Dreams. This is a loyal, non-unique Lannister attachment for one. It has the dream trait, and opponent's character only. Then bestow 3, and reaction after attached character is knelt. Discard 1 gold from Fever Dreams to draw 2 cards. Cersei's attendant, pretty much 100% the definition of kind of a win more effect right there. Though I'm mildly tempted to play a couple still in Reigns just for the strength to cost.
So stop being tempted by that. It's a mop.
The last port guard and red cloaks are both better at that cost.
Would it have really?
Oh yeah, I forgot about the red cloaks. Yeah,
wait, a second icon couldn't have been given to that card. Seriously, they thought that was too good for a second icon.
It's 2 for 3 in second edition, man. That's just
with no text.
That doesn't happen much, but yeah. Though it is the first. Possible insight even we've seen on a non-unique though, right?
Yeah.
It's
interesting but that regardless, they gave Lannister 2 draw cards.
Yeah. In this same pack. And Fever Dreams, I think, is quite good. I mean, I'm a little bummed I can't play it on setup, but I'm willing to invest a couple gold into this. I mean, it's not even terminal.
Hey, what makes this better than Lannisport?
You don't have to win a challenge, and it costs. And Lannisport costs 3.
So how much does this cost?
This costs 1 plus maybe 2, and you get the same effect and get more cards, and you don't have to win a challenge.
You don't get more cards.
Or I want to point out. It may also, against some opponents, make them not want to use that character in a challenge.
Only if they're bad.
I guarantee you'll play people that have that conundrum then.
Yes, but if the person is bad, I don't think this is better than Lannisport.
Just because attachments are more vulnerable because of like on-demand confiscation, or just because of slots.
Attachments are vulnerable. You're gonna have to replay this multiple times. This is dead against some houses, Night's Watch sometimes. It's dead against Stark sometimes, which I've been finding. Stark has a lot of no attachments.
Yeah, they do.
That's fair.
And
yeah.
It's just, and hey, Lannister, the best Lannister deck, at least right now, like maybe one day, but the best Lannister deck by a fucking lot really likes winning intrigue.
Yeah.
So that deck that loves winning intrigue challenges on offense or defense still doesn't run 3-cost repeatable draw, which is basically a guaranteed card per turn, but usually more like 2 guaranteed cards per turn. And, like, this is costing ultimately the same or more because you end up having to keep playing it. And, like, it's not set upable. Well, that, like, I don't think this is better. I think people do because it looks cheaper.
No, I think you make cheaper.
You probably want to pay 3 for this.
No, I think you make a good, I think you make a good case. I just think that, like, there are some, like, I don't know. I just don't think that, like, draw is just so, like, not abundant at all. Especially, yeah. And especially, like, in this faction. What, you got, like, Pycelle and you've got Lannisport and Cersei's wheelhouse? Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, I think that people are going to play this. It might be interesting. You know, who knows? It may, like, end up being something that works its way into the non-Reigns deck. I don't know.
I think there's not a rest. I guess Wolf.
Yeah, Lanny Wolf is still good. I don't know. I think it's fine. I don't know. Like, the problem with Lannister, every time there's a good Lannister card that comes out until rotation, is slots. And you look at every good Lannister card and you go, this is really good. Am I taking out a treachery for this? No. Am I taking out one of my other denial events or removal effects? No. Am I dropping one of my low curve ambush guys? No. And so I think that that's the problem with this card. But in and of itself, it's a good card.
You can't find anything to cut.
Yeah, in and of itself, it's a good card.
If I were running a Lannister deck that needed the draw, like, I feel like this might be good in, like, the jumper if that still existed. But I don't think.
Well, the jumper doesn't exist because of this pack, yeah?
I mean, because of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but, I mean, Lacey really pushes that over the top.
Well, Night's Watch has been really bad for jumper for a long time.
Fair enough,
too, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like, the jumper doesn't really want to run into a rush deck and just be done before it can play.
Yeah.
Like, these are all problems for jumper, yeah. Right? Like, the actual meta is bad for jumper.
Right.
If jumper ever came back, I could see running Fever Drake because you just want more and more draw to find more and more jumper events. But beyond that, I don't think it's good. And Cersei's, like, what's, I don't know, like, Cersei's attendant is just, like, actively offensively bad.
It's pretty not great.
Hey, man, you can get it with that stupid street that you can search the top.
I mean, and then you can kneel it for a hot pie.
Yeah, man.
To make someone. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to give that an F and Fever Dream to C. So I'm giving this house a D.
Oof.
That's harsh. I can't underrate draw that bad. So I'm going to say C minus because I think that people will figure out a way to play Fever Dreams at some point, just not me at this moment in time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think draw still gets rated pretty decently for me. So I think I'm going to give Lanny a full C out of this pack.
So much diversity. And now I get to read.
We're getting
I get to read Greyjoy.
At least it's a good Greyjoy.
I was going to say, you know, I'm not too disappointed with these.
Don't say one of them.
Well, yeah, okay. So I get I get Theon Greyjoy. He is a House Greyjoy non-loyal character. Cost 3, strength 2, military and power icons. Unique, of course, Ironborn and Lord traits. While Theon Greyjoy is attacking alone, each character with a higher strength than his does not contribute its strength to the challenge. Whew, he's spicy.
Thank God, Targ is in the meta.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's real spicy. And then I get Corsair's Dirk, which is a non-loyal attachment, cost of 1, weapon trait, Ironborn character only. Attached character gets +2 strength. Reaction: after you win a challenge which attached character is attacking, move 1 gold from the losing opponent's gold to your own gold pool to your own. Eh. Theon, though, Theon is hilariously good. Like, I mean, any amount of strength manipulation that you can muster in a banner package is cool. Him by himself is fine. Like, he gives all kinds of headaches that Greyjoy, I think, needs. Like, I want Greyjoy to have, like, another character that isn't just Balon, where you just go, all right, well, I have to do this now, and I just, like, outmaneuver your entire game plan. Like, Theon on the table makes things real interesting. I think he's really, really good. And like you said, thank God Targ is currently really strong, because this guy is bonkers. The attachment is whatever. I mean, 1 for 2 strength is efficient in its own right, but again, slots.
Yeah, I mean, it looks tempting with Balin, but is probably too meh on its own. But I like, from a flavor perspective, speaking of Balin, I love how Theon, Balin's kind of failure of a son, is the inverse ability of him. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Greyjoy just has the best banner pack.
Oh, yeah, he's non-loyal. That's like, insane. Like,
it's situational better, but like Victarion, Iron Mines, Theon, Asha. Location.
And I was going to say, and you can get the Bandit Lord if you want, or what is it called now? Mm-hmm. Newly Made Lord?
Newly Made Lord.
Yeah.
And then, like, or you can get the Seabitch. Or you can get the little one that nails
things. You get Ezgrid.
I feel like it's probably mm-hmm. good. Yeah, these, like, I don't think there's anything close as far as a banner house. Like, there's specific situations where, like, certain houses want something else. But overall,
I love the Targ stand package. I think that's really janky and interesting.
Yeah, yes, janky and interesting versus Arian, Theon, Iron Mines.
Oh, no, I understand. You were talking about banner packages. I was like, I love like all the Targ non loyal stand. I think it's like fascinating, and like somebody will figure it out one day.
And Tyrell has some cool intimidating sandy stuff, and
renown.
Stark has a bunch. Some renown. Like, there's stuff.
Yeah, Greyjoy has a really, really tempting banner package. Dude, Theon is really good.
Yeah.
Is he ever more than a one-up?
You know, if I'm doing Lords of the Crossing, maybe more? He just, he adds so much punch to that first challenge.
Oh, God, yes. But then again, you don't really get a whole lot more benefit out of him from that than you do with just like a 2-strength character defending. I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
So I think he's late for a 1-up, or at least.
But why would
Targ straight up goes?
Do you run this guy? Because I think that this is one of the few like instances where we have a legitimate choice in deck building decisions, where the Corset Theon and this guy, like, do like functionally the same thing, but they do it in a different way, and mm-hmm. and you really want to make a choice. And I think that like that there is an interesting decision point there. I love Theon like all the way around.
Unless First Snow comes back, I'll take this one.
Exactly. Same. That's the way I am too. But yeah.
Good.
And the attachment.
And if Ward makes a big push again, this Theon is considerably less of a detriment to lose.
Is he? I'm not entirely sure of this.
What'd you say, Will?
I mean, my opponent, yes, if Ward comes back, I'm not potentially just losing the game.
Yeah,
right. I can't, this Corsair Durk, you know what it enables?
That ambush guy, man. Gives weapons ambush.
Yeah, man. Oh, and
I've been waiting to see something with that, but I don't think the effect is enough.
I'm just gonna straight up ignore it. Tell me you're done with bullshit.
I was just saying it's a card. It exists.
I can't hear you. I don't understand.
No, I think Greyjoy gets a solid. I think Greyjoy gets a solid B+ out of this pack, because I think that Theon is like a legitimate consideration in most decks, and I don't care about the Corsair Durk. I just think Theon is going to be something that people are excited to play with, and he's going to cause a lot of headaches when he hits the table.
B plus F.
I think flat B.
I think I've like changed the way I rate like factions based on two cards, because I don't really care, like, because you only get two cards per pack, and so like if you get one that you're like, yeah, I'm slotting that in 1x in every Greyjoy deck I build, or even Banner Kraken deck I build, I'm sitting there like, yep, all right, that's high B range.
Yeah, no, I think I'm kind of with you there. It's about how the pack as a whole impacts the house, not just a straight average between the two cards.
Am I doing Targ?
Yeah, I'll be next.
You can do Targ. I'll do Martell. No, Will can do Martell.
No, I'm doing it.
Okay. Will, do you...
I want Martell, so I'll give up.
Will, do you want to do Targ, or do you want to do Neutrals?
Oh, I don't care. You sounded excited about Targ.
We take turns to Neutrals, right? So, like, there's no...
Yeah.
I guess that's fair, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about the Targ cards. So,
yeah, you should.
Yeah, I was going to say, you get Grey Worm, who is a loyal character, costs 6, strength 5, military and intrigue icons. He's unique, of course, with the companion trait. No attachments except weapons. Action. During a challenge in which Grey Worm is attacking, choose a defending character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets -3 strength. Limit once per challenge. Whew. Yes. And then I get Astapor, which is a 1-cost unique location. It is loyal. It has the traits Astapor and Contested, which will matter in a second. Bestow 4. Action. Kneel Astapor to choose a participating character. Until the end of the challenge, that character gets -X strength, where X is the number of gold Astapor has. Whew. Oh, doggy.
You are such a elder.
Dude, these cards are dope. Like, both of these cards I'm just so excited about. Like, I have not been a huge fan of running Blood of the Dragon in my recent Targ builds. And I know that that's not necessarily the way a lot of people are going, because I hate Beggar King, but that's a whole different discussion. Whatever, dude. And then... These two cards alone make just flipping that plot just lock down a challenge phase for your opponent. Like, it's just, like, they just can't do anything. There's no without attachments restrictions for this burn. Even though it's non-terminal, all you need is one more terminal effect. Like, this amount of challenge control alone, despite, like, maybe not killing something, is insane. Like... Targ has plenty of stand to make Grey Worm a machine gun. Astapor, like I said, on a Blood of the Dragon turn, like, if you have the money to take the tempo hit on the turn before, basically just make the opponent cry, because anything with strength 5 or lower is basically dead if you try to defend a challenge. It's gross. Like, I love both these cards. They make me want to continue just playing Targ, which is fine, I guess. I haven't gotten tired of it. I can't say enough about how cool both of these effects are. I absolutely love both of them.
Yeah, we've been waiting for Burn to really come back for Targ to become a viable deck type, and now this cycle, we're just getting it... Oh. Well, no, we're getting it just heaped on us, is what I mean. Just so much that it's a little staggering to really look at. I think the impact of this is going to be even bigger than a lot of people realize. If my experiences, again, drawing it back to first edition here, but if my experiences there are any sort of rough guide about Targ starting off in kind of a weird place without quite enough burn to really seal the deal, and then how drastically the environment as a whole shifted once they got the tools they needed to really make that a viable kind of control deck, I think we're in for some shakeups here.
So... Broken is a word, right?
It's a word. I'm borderline there, yeah.
I don't know what there is to like personally. It's hard.
Dude, can you? I just can't even imagine. Just like, well, because like, okay, so Fire and Blood is just never gets worse because I will never dupe a dragon again unless First Snow of Winter becomes a thing. Because I will chuck a dragon dupe in my hand for a Plaza of Pride trigger for Grey Worm and then just murder dudes over and over and over again. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. I mean,
oh god.
And even if you're not doing anything like else in combo with it, Astapor just like ends jump challenges on your opponent's behalf. Like, which as a strategy to kind of
pull people out in the challenges phase,
I think is
Danny ends jump challenges alone. Well, Astapor can literally like end like
end normal challenges. Yeah, like,
gross. I mean,
huge protection for your hand on entry, if you're just stopping those dead.
I think one of the big things that people are probably looking for are the big flashy like terminal effects where you can combine these things with, you know, Plaza of Punishment or a Dracarys trigger. But it's, to me, the insanity really comes with just the amount of challenge control and the sheer headache that you put your opponent through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not one or the other.
No, it's both. It's both, because you have to be afraid of losing your guys or just getting, like, just owned in the challenge phase.
Like, there's just very little to do about this, right? Like,
right, because great haul, man. Just, great haul, man.
There's just too much of it. There's just too much of it. That game becomes, oh, you got that. That sucks. Oop, you got that. That
sucks. Yeah, kind of.
Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do.
It'll be hilarious. Like, I would love to see and hate to see the day where, like, you just put a couple cards on the table as Targ and then just have your opponent go, all right, I'm done. And, like, that looks like this it's almost there, if not already there. Yeah, it might be. Well, it's not just burn, right? Like, it's defense, or it's like just like big dumb idiots, or it's, you know, yeah. There's all kinds of stuff. Like, if Greyjoy unopposed becomes super oppressive, like, yeah, like that needs to be reined in. You know, it's, yeah, fine with it. I wasn't a while ago, but I'm at that point where I look at two cards in the same pack like that, and I go, ooh, yeah, those could be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I've been just kind of steeling myself to the possibility for a while, and I mean, I think anybody who just kind of understands how games of this nature work knows that eventually we're going to hit the point where something has to be done, so like, if this be that point, so be it.
Yeah.
I also feel like once we actually have a restricted list, we'll be happy for it. Really,
I think so too.
I think it makes the game significantly better, mm-hmm. and I think people are scared of it because of other games. I don't think many people who tried it in first edition think it ever made the game worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least the ones I've played.
Martell cards.
All right. Oh, wait, well, we gotta rate. Yeah.
Do we have to?
A plus?
No, they get an S.
Yeah, they get an
S. S. Okay.
Like, if there's ever someone to get an S, this is
an S. Yeah, they get an S.
S plus. Which isn't even a thing. Just for this
pack. Like, we invented E for the last pack.
Yeah.
Yep.
And look, Will has been lamenting for 6 years that there is no E. I just finally figured out what it could be to make him happy.
Yeah, and it's perfect. It fits so amazingly. No E's in this pack so far. It's interesting. Let's see what happens here with the last handful of cards.
Right. So, wait. Can I have a last Targ thought?
Sure.
I don't think either of these cards are interesting. Like, they're both great, but I don't think either of them is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, what's your answer to Astapor besides location? Don't challenge.
nightmares.
Yeah, no, no, besides little shit that controls
really big characters.
Yeah, really.
Sir Gregor.
And then what's your answer to defending from anything Grim Reaper does? It's not like there's a skill, it's just like literally, hey, that guy defended.
How much more balanced would that card have been if it just said with no attachments?
Yep.
Yeah.
But like, it's just, so attachments were actually doing a decent job of balancing it. It's only Dracaris, I think. Real burn would hit it, right? And like,
well, and Danny, of course, and Crown.
Well, Danny doesn't actually get it.
No, but she just enables it. Crown.
Yeah, like Aaron's Crown. Just meaning to kill stuff, I think.
Yeah, and Crown, which is basically a fourth.
Yeah.
But like, Rero and Esper just like, yeah, point and click. I don't like burn is meant to be a skill play, and these are very pointed. Grey Worm I can live with at that cost, not having a balance.
And it's only while attacking, which is nice.
Yeah, and ask.
The fact that he has no attachments besides weapon, like, I understand the thematic implications of it, but I mean, like, the fact that you can't just milk him and be like, oh, thank God, is rough.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, they get an S.
Yeah. He's some good cards. S plus. Alright, let's talk about some actual interesting cards.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
One of which is bad, which is amazing. Maester of Sunspear is a House Martell non-loyal Maester. 2 for 2 entry. Reaction. After you lose a challenge which Maester of Sunspear is participating, choose an attachment to return it to its owner's hand. Dornish 50. House Martell loyal costs 2 Dorn. Limited. Nail Dornish 50 gain 1 gold. 2 gold instead if you're not the first player. I think that's the best one besides the
problem. Mm-hmm. So far.
That's, like, although it does sort of change Martell's game plan, right?
Does it?
Because you have, you have to change your plot first.
Two extra retaliation, good to go.
And Marched is really good. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of them, sure. But, like, A, then you're running a bunch of low reserve stuff.
Yeah, God, don't you wish you had a reserve boost besides the freaking Iron Throne?
Yeah.
Banner, no.
No, I guess there's what? God's Eye, right?
That card is
terrible. Alright,
that's not a card.
Yeah, really. Only. So, Dornish 50 is, however, great, and it's interesting in that it affects deck building. It's not something you just slot in. Maester of Sunspear is close to good. Right? If he had a power icon, also, fine. Or, like, just give him. I mean, I guess 2 strength is nice. Arcs in the meta.
Yeah, he's non-loyal, which is interesting. So, I mean...
What attachments do I really want to bounce to?
Ice.
Move your own milk to a better target?
Yeah, but ice doesn't matter. But ice doesn't matter, because then you basically just... They just put a cat in the challenge, and it doesn't matter.
Right, yeah.
God.
Exactly. It's just... Like,
God, he's so close to
like, bouncing a milk for a turn.
Marin,
he's really
cool. Why didn't he just say after you lose a challenge, kneel Maester of Sunspear to choose an attachment and return it to his owner's hand? That would have been so dope.
Yeah, he's close. He's just close. He's not quite there. I appreciate the effort, though. Like, he's close. Apparently, FFG wants to make attachments a thing, and much like fetch,
it's just not gonna happen.
Oh, man. I do love the reference, though.
Who doesn't love Mean Girls? If you don't love Mean Girls, you should stop listening to this podcast.
And then go watch Mean Girls until you love it.
Yeah.
And then
just don't watch Mean Girls 2, whatever.
And then come back and listen to the podcast after you love Mean Girl.
With it.
Doris Fiefdom's dope.
Well, aside from the Maester, I was going to say, I love the Fiefdom.
I just had a problem because I looked at the next card, which isn't a Martell card, but it is a Targ card that they didn't bother to print Targ on. So, is there something higher than an S? Like, how about just a star?
But I just guess a star.
Just a star.
Man, you just keep upgrading them.
I mean, we'll get there. All right, sorry.
Wait, what did you say? I don't even understand what you're...
We'll come back. We'll talk about that when we get to the next card. Sorry, sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Talk about the Martell stuff.
Oh, Dornish Fiefdom is amazing.
Well, yeah. Oh, it's so good. I mean, I think it's very playable in Joust. And in Melee, it's another one of those cards that I think scales well. Martell is already a very good Melee house. And I, you know, so I like it. I like that most all of these extra income locations are looking very playable.
Well, I think...
without being quite, you know, great hall.
And I think that the interesting thing about Dornish Fiefdom is that, like, a lot of people are going to try to, at first, you know, really maximize it with the two retaliations and, like, a marched or whatever, and then try to, like, cram in as many other high initiative plots as possible. But the thing is, like, you don't need it. Like... a lot of times, especially if you're playing against, like, big dumb idiot decks, or, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, Targ right now is running, what, they're running Valor, Blood of the Dragon isn't super high initiative, like, you know, maybe
well, yeah.
Coppers.
I mean, I think
you can figure out
ways. You can
ways
look at
to,
a lot of mid-range
exactly.
stuff that's fine. You know, you're up against a lot of the, like, summer plots. Mm-hmm. That are capping out at, what, maybe three? I guess four with Harvest, but Harvest, I think, is on a real downswing. At least in this area, Varus Riddle is,
see, it's
is
freaking, see,
high Harvest on the hog.
Is, Harvest is everywhere around here because nobody's playing Varus' Riddle.
Yeah, everyone's moved on to summer, Late Summer Feast down yeah. here at the moment.
Ugh, I would love to come play with y'all.
Oof, I personally love that plot. I mean, love playing it. And I don't mind seeing my opponent play it either. But, you know, just in general, you're looking at a lot of those Kingdom and Summer plots that are for the most part, capping out around three, a couple hit up to four. But, you know, that opens you up then to some stuff
See,
in the,
me,
like, six-ish range.
This is going to be, like, one of my, I just want the, I want to play double heads on spikes with this. Like, I want to play so many different things.
Yeah,
I want to play,
there's a six right
yeah,
there.
I want to play so many different things. I want to play Annals of Castle Black and get all my hand destruction events. Like, I want.
It's what, five?
You should play good cards and stuff.
I understand. I'm just saying this is my jank idea. This is not my competitive juices flowing. This is me thinking, like, all of the different ways that I can just get more gold to do, like, funny stuff with.
Embrace the jank.
Yeah, I like jank. Aaron doesn't, because Aaron doesn't like to have fun, which is why he doesn't play Thrones.
Ooh.
I do, but I only like to have fun if I'm also winning. And, like I don't want to win and not have fun, because I can do that. It's like, I feel like I've proven that I'm good enough to, like, at worst, go 4-2 in any field of the world. And, like...
yeah, that's fair.
But if I'm not... But I want to play a fun deck. And
well, and that's
like
my.
Thrones doesn't really offer me much.
I'm with you too, and so sometimes it's to my detriment. But you know,
yeah. I mean, and Dornish Fiefdom would, I think, balance things out. But like, Astapor and Grey Worm.
Yeah, see, like that's the problem, right? Is that like when Burn is really, really good, like Martell just cries. Ugh. I don't know. I still think Martell gets, like, a solid... again, I think that Martell gets, like, a B+, because I think Dornish Fiefdom is that good. I think that it's going to be dependent on your plot deck, which is why it doesn't get up into the A range, but I think it's a B+.
I don't think I'm that high up on it. I don't think they needed the income quite as badly as, say, Night's Watch. Mm.
Have you met Old
but
Forest
I
Ranger?
Still... you know, once or twice.
Have met Varus in Martell.
Exactly. Yeah.
I do like it. I mean, I like what they've got here, and I like that they're at least experimenting with some more attachment control.
Dude, this guy,
I'm just not as high up on it. I'm
going to
give
freaking,
it maybe like a minus.
Orphan of the Green Blood, because you get more gold to bestow on it.
Yeah?
That's why you... It's just an amazing.
It's card. Really good. Like,
it's the second best economy of these locations.
Does that make it an A-? Does that make the faction an A-?
I think it's an S. B's.
so I'm going to give it an A minus.
Man, I'm just going to stick with B plus. I'm going to stick with B plus, but I kind of want to give it an A minus.
I really, I not only like Maester, and I only like Dornish 50, I really also want to reward that design. Because that is everything the target rotation should be. It is interesting and interactive instead of just being like, hey, look at
this. Yeah, I think you've convinced me. I think I'm with an A minus. I think I'm with it.
Alright, I'll stay at my lower rating then, and we'll let the listeners berate me for it later.
Undermining locations.
Yep. Really? Except for that one more time.
You're all English majory, and you said undermining.
Or undervaluing, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, it's undermining as well, but in this particular situation, it should be undervaluing. Yeah.
Oh right, that was an interesting side. Can I talk about the tar card that's not a tar card?
Sure.
So you know how Burn really likes to see cards?
Yeah.
Tark has this Burn event, and that Burn event needs lords. And then there's this neutral lord called Frey Lordling. It's 3/2 military power, House Frey Lord. After you initiate a challenge, Frey Lordling gets +1 strength until the end of the phase. So, like, not only does it give you a draw in Targ, but also, like, that extra strength is really, really powerful when you're burning all their shit, because then they have a bunch less strength and you have a bunch more.
So you're saying eat your own dude with Plaza and get a funeral pyre?
No, never eat your own dude. Like, he's just claims.
Oh, I see.
Like,
yeah.
You're going to lose the challenge. Okay. You just ignore military funeral pyre, and you're like, hey, look, I have all the extra burn cards.
Yeah, I guess I get that.
I dragged it.
And if not, then you can swing back with him because he's, like, getting huge strength boosts, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, he's going to win you some Plaza challenges, right?
Yeah.
And, like, he's a worse on attack 3/3.
Yeah, I think he's pretty good.
Which I think is reasonable, you know, especially a Bicon, and you throw in that trait. I think he's solid.
No, I think he's really good. I think that
he's a tar card.
I think both of the Frey card, the Frey characters that we got from the last two packs are both really good. I think that it might. I mean, if we get more, I don't know if we're getting more in the next pack. When is the they showed some of the other ones later on, right?
I feel like they maybe have from the next pack after this, Walter? But I don't remember. Yes, yeah. You give some kind of boost to your whole team in the third challenge.
I think that like this could be something that the design team regrets. Just like sheer like neutral strength boosts that get better in bunches with like Ocean Road and Great Hall existing and like just high income plots and strength manipulation for two factions in particular, like that could be really, really silly.
Can I just say,
am I right, Aaron?
That FFG missed now you're talking to Aaron out of coming back and playing more.
I've got one more tournament coming, then I'm done for the year.
Okay.
Well, I'm done for the until
you'll play a Gen Con.
Oh, no, I'm not.
No, you're not going to. Where are you going, Worlds?
I'm going to be in Colombia.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Like the country? Yeah.
Like
you country. Visiting your wife's folks? Or?
Yeah, they haven't met the baby. So, like, that's probably a good idea. So I'm definitely out for Gen Con. But I will be. I don't know. I'm not at anything for a while. I'm at the New York thing. If you come to the New York thing.
Dance?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Okay.
I think we should rename it A Dance with Dragons, but okay.
I think you should name it Luke Wortley should get free tickets to go out there and then he'll come.
I'm a teacher.
Perfect. I like that name.
I'm all for. Oh, hey.
I just realized how awful that sounded, but whatever.
That card, the little lord dude, Ray Lordling, also works really well with Rhea.
Mm-hmm.
With what?
With Darius.
Darius.
The little shed for Targ that gets draw when she participates with the Order Lady.
Oh, yeah. I forgot she also got to do that with lords. So you get some insights, just yeah. Ladies.
Wow. Frayed Lordling is cool. Okay, then.
Yeah. So what do we give it overall? Like a
oh, wait, do we give...
Are we rating it as a Targ card?
do we rate each individual neutral card, or do we rate all the neutral cards?
Yeah. No, we had been rating the individual neutral cards.
Oh, see, that's how much I pay attention on these guys.
Man!
So, are we reading it as a Targ card, or as a neutral card?
A neutral card.
Because as a Targ card, it makes that star happen.
Yeah, I understand.
As a neutral card, I think it's still an A. I think it's a super S in Targ, and a neutral card in A otherwise.
I think that cost slot for a neutral guy is tough. I think that it's a B+ on its own. Because I think that, like, at least half of the factions that currently exist are really interested in this guy. But I think that at 3 for 2, with, you know, depending on initiative order, all that different stuff, like, I think that... I think there's situations where he's just incredible and others where... you wish you had something else. But I think he's still really good on his own, so I'll give him a B+. I love him in icon removal in Martell, if that ever becomes a thing.
Alright, on to the next fray card. I'll jump on that one.
Ooh,
yeah. I'll take it.
It's a juicy one.
It's the twins. Yeah. 2 cost. Neutral, of course, and unique. House Frey and the Riverland Straits. And during the third challenge you initiate each phase, if you control an attacking House Frey character, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1. I think claim boosting is nothing to sneeze at all in second edition. Still think most folks are so conditioned to only be having to deal with 1 claim. The 2 claim really messes with a lot of plots, or a lot of plans rather. And you know, there's a lot of flexibility here. So many decks are making 3 challenges, you know, whether they're winning them or not, that I don't think that's much of a drawback to actually have to do that.
It's cool. It's horrendous. I mean, like, because it's you only have to control 1. 1.
Yep.
And so, like, we only have, what, 2 Frey characters at the moment? 1's non-unique?
We're not a critical match.
No, but, like, you only have to control 1, and, like, the Lordling has military... and Black Walder has military. Black Walder has intrigue. And then this guy has power. Like, it's already flexible, and it's only a 2-drop. It's dope.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's semi-playable right now. But we just need another 1 or 2, and I think suddenly it's... like, very reasonable.
If there is a single other non-unique Frey character, this becomes immediately insane.
Yeah.
Because I think that you're going to have a hard time finding slots for the unique Frey characters in general. But if there's another non-unique coming up, like, this thing's dumb. I'm not going to say busted, because I'm not convinced. But because you still have to plan your whole turn around leveraging, you know, your own icon spread and that kind of thing, and a lot of stuff can happen to you if you're going second, that kind of thing. But yeah, this card's really good. It's super efficient. Wow.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it. Okay. Yeah.
It's one that I would give a like conditional rating to. I honestly think it's only like a C at the moment, but it's just a couple cards away from jumping up to like a B+ at least.
Yeah, I agree.
I can't.
Like with Will. Yeah, like every word.
I can't fault that. Yeah, that's. Yeah, that's pretty good because it's still a neutral location. So yeah. But woof. Yeah, that, it could get dangerous really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets lay siege and who gets duel?
I won't.
All right, I'll do lay siege since I haven't read a neutral yet. Lay siege is a neutral event, cost one. Siege trait, action, choose and kneel a location. Then, if that location is contested, discard it from play.
Really? Besides that, besides Astapor, you're not hitting
Lanny Harrenhal.
Which doesn't seem like.
Not at the moment. Not since Great Hall got released. Right. Yeah. White Tree every once in a while.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, I think Astapor and a Harrenhal are going to be the main targets right now.
No, I think the discard is huge. I think this is one of those cards that, like, kind of like Ward after it made its huge splash, just kind of everybody has to go, I have a contested location. Like, how many of these am I going to run? If somebody's, you know what I mean? Because the first part of the action, just choose and kneel a location for a buck, isn't horrible.
Yeah, it's just, at what point are you running this overnight?
Right, and that's the obvious comparison. You know, do you want to just blank one, or do you want to just go ahead and, yeah. And, you know, who's to say that there's not going to be a super, like, oppressive deck that runs both? I don't know. I don't know. I think that it's, like, its existence is good in that, like, it puts at least the fear of the designers in the minds of certain players who might be willing to run those locations. I think that this card was, like, in some way needed, even if it doesn't necessarily see a ton of play.
It's maybe an E card then, right? Kind of a pressure valve-y sort of thing.
Yep, I think that this card is an E.
There we go. We had one this pack. I'm excited.
All right, ready for the champ card designed by 2014 national champion. Sorry, North American champion. Used to be national. They changed it. North American champion, Jonathan Darknotch Andrews. This card is Duel. It's neutral. John thinks it's called Joust, by the way, still, which is ridiculous. It's his champ card. It is neutral. Plot, income 4, initiative 5, claim 1, reserve 6. Plot deck limit 1, war. When revealed, choose an opponent. That player chooses 2 non-army characters, each with printer cost 6 or higher. Then, that player chooses and kneels one of his characters. Kill the other cannot be saved. This card is as good or bad as the meta is, and it would be amazing right now. Except the high majority of really high-cost decks, I think, really, really kind of want to run the Eerie. And the Eerie makes this a really bad card.
Depending on what you're doing with it. You know, if you're trying to give that that Martell character light deck some legs again, then even with the Eerie, then doesn't this just become a filthy accusations worst case?
Filthy, yeah. It's a worse filthy at that point.
Yeah, which is obviously suboptimal, but like is not the end of the world if that's the worst you get out of it. And you know, obviously, if there's not a Harrenhal, or not Harrenhal, Eerie on the board, then you can try and take the opportunity to use this earlier if it looks like their deck is the kind that might want it.
Yes. Yes. It's got its uses. It's definitely playable. I just think that it's dangerous.
This card is a pressure valve card again, right?
Yeah, I think it probably is, but I think it's an amazing deal card in Melee, too, right? Like, if you can trust someone.
You know,
This is a lot like that old first edition one that had your opponent kill one character, only this is potentially even more brutal.
Do you know what my favorite, like, melee flip is unexpected delay? And then,
okay.
Just because of the hilarious banter it ensues, and then this card is arguably funnier.
Yeah, this will lead to a lot of political bickering back and forth, and I think will definitely lead to some backstabs. I don't think it's a bad one to have in your back pocket, so to speak. I think if you're at a melee tournament in the Swiss rounds, this is going to get you through some games, and thankfully, you know, most of the melee games don't go past round three or four, so even at a final table where you are almost certain to be stabbed in the back with it, you know, you can kind of table it and not have to reveal it.
I'm gonna ask you, like, how much do you think
are we done talking about melee?
Well, I was gonna say, no, yeah, I'm gonna say in Joust, like, how much does this impact, like, the meta at large? Like, do people build with this card in mind, or and say, I don't know how many... do I want to stock them up more on mid-range guys? Or do they just say, screw it, I don't care. I have dupes, I have bodyguards, I have iron mines. I have all these different things. It just doesn't matter.
None of that works.
Oh, it says cannot be saved. Yeah, but, like, do they... Or do they just, like... Do they just say, I have so many good cards, it doesn't matter? Or what?
So I think for this to truly have affected the meta, it needs to be not limit one per plot deck.
Ooh.
Because limiting it per plot deck means if I have Tywin and Jamie, still Jamie has got Tywin.
Oh my gosh!
That might be enough for tempo.
Play, yeah, that's right? Pretty rough.
But it also, but like, I can also then just play Illyn and Gregor and like six other.
Jamie. Yeah, well, I guess that was the better part of my question because I forgot they cannot be saved. It's like, you know, the decks that are already running, you know, huge like min max curves.
It's if you want to, like, if there were a deck, and I don't believe there is one on the top head that really, really wants two big cost guys on the board at once for a specific reason, this would, and, like, only those two, this would be a
problem. Yeah.
But, like, it gives too much control to your opponent, right? Like, because let's look at the actual rating. The opponent, you choose an opponent, right. That player chooses two non-army characters.
Right.
Each with a printer cost six or higher, you're assuming that you're running a low enough curve that they have to choose two of their mm-hmm. own, right? Then that player chooses and kills one. Right. So, like, if they're just going to kneel the better one, all the power on the move, whatever, kill the other, cannot be saved.
Right.
And, like, so, like, all that decision power in your opponent's hand, but then they're just like, well, I've got, like, and then if, let's say they have, Tywin, Jamie, and, I don't know, Illyn, and they're like, oh, well, I guess you killed Illyn, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, there's just, like, if you just get, like, five, they're still choosing which two. Now Tywin and Junior's in and Illyn is, and like Cersei is now, she can still gain power and Illyn is there.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, like, if this were, if you could play this and then play this. So, like, be like, I got one of your big guys, I got Claim, and then I got another of your big guys,
yeah.
And then I got Claim again, and now you're just, right? Like, that's a different problem. But, like, with only one of per plot deck, like, I don't think this can impact boards.
Well, I mean, it's probably good we don't have that available, what with Red Wedding coming, what, at the end of this cycle?
I'm not sure how often that card's going to see play. I don't think that card
they occupy a similar space.
I think Red Wedding's bad.
I think this card is situationally awesome.
I also think Red Wedding just straight up supports... Oh, like big guy, right? Like they can just, like, if it has no initiative, right? Am I crazy?
Right.
They go second. You can attack into it and suffer if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, they just get all the benefit with their big guys that are just forming a wall anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Red Wedding is really fucking scary. It's a nice one.
Oh.
So, like, I don't know
if that's fair.
Ever actually play Red Wedding. Well, you can play duel, but it's going to be in certain matchups and kind of useless in others. Like, hey, if it were
against Night's Watch.
Yeah. Against Night's Watch, against a lot of Martell, yeah. Against, like, Barra unless they've seen Bob. Like, are they, like, they could be running common sense. They don't always have both out. And it's just like, oh. Or,
yeah.
Like, what happens if there's only one six coster out?
Then it can't resolve.
Yeah, then it just fizzles.
You
right?
try not to play this.
Yeah, because you have to choose two.
This really needs to be limited.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess I get the... I get the intent. So do you think that this affects deck building at all, though? It's a champ card. I think it merits some additional discussion, right? Like, does this like make people go, hmm?
So, no. Some of that decision needs to be on the side of the table of the player who makes it. Or it needs to be... and I don't like talk bad about my first card, right? But like, or some of it, or it needs to be limit two, or it needs like an E reserve, like a 7, right? Like, it needs to be real upside, and I'm not sure where that upside exists unless you get really lucky. Like, maybe a rush, super rush, like, you couldn't really afford to play this, right?
No.
So,
yeah, I don't think you do.
Like, this may have a full Coleman Martell, but I don't know where else.
I think that's the most likely, though. You know, some Night's Watch builds, yeah, I think, might try it.
Like, is this better than either of the in-house Night's Watch locations, though? And only one of those even sees play.
Yeah. The plots, you mean?
Yeah. That's what I meant.
Yeah. You know, maybe not, but they might experiment with it. But, I mean, yeah, other houses are sure not looking at it. I mean, Tyrell and Lannister just write it off right off the bat, right? They want to have a lot of those dudes.
I mean, Lenny Jumper may...
Maybe, yeah.
Like, probably not, because they still wanted Tyrell.
Yeah. I would have said Targaryen, because they mainly just wanted to stick Dany at that cost slot, but, you know, now you're looking at Grey Winds, maybe Drogos and such, so...
Well, but then, like, basically your opponent would just kneel their 7-cost dude and then bomb Dany.
Well, okay, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I was too busy thinking about... fizzling with one, yeah, the other side of the board, yeah. So no, they don't really want to look at it either.
So I'm gonna give it a C minus.
I'm gonna give it a C on the nose because I don't think that it's a bad plot, but it's super situational.
Like, I really just feel like I'm just going to stick a couple of your in a lot of decks. If you hit me with it, good play. Like, it's a variance of Grease Variance. I don't think it's what it's trying to do. Like, its design wants to do Grease Variance. Its function says, now you're running the area. Variance is way the fuck.
Probably so.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess C sounds reasonable. It's a plot that I want to think could cycle in and out of the meta, maybe build some relevance as we get a little bit of a cheaper curve that's playable for some of those other houses. But, you know, the instant we do that, you're to play this, you're relying on the assumption that your opponents are not also playing those cheaper curves. Yeah.
Nobody's playing well, cheaper cost curves except Night's Watch.
Well, there's something to be said for just volume of cards eventually getting there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying, like, at this particular moment, I'm like, my faith is not, like, particularly high in not printing, like, at least, like, 2 6 plus cost characters per cycle and deluxe, you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. The much.
Well, so there you have it.
So, final chapter pack thoughts?
You know, I think it's a good pack overall. I'm excited about several cards in this compared to really only being excited for about one in the last pack.
I think this pack has something to offer for every faction, pretty much, which is a good place to be. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. I think my only real concern with this at all is how strong the card gets.
Oh.
Like, I'm not sure that, like, maybe gigantic. But, like, I'm not sure what really is.
Is anybody else except me, like, both excited and, like, really worried about the Frey tech?
I'm not yet. Like, because Targ just burns it. Like, if the Frey tech is going, they're probably running Lords of the Crossing, and then too much strength, kind of a problem.
I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like it to be good, because just be more interested. I also don't love good.
Well, like I said, that's my problem. It's like, I'm interested in it because it is, like, a different way to approach the challenges phase, but I'm scared because it's neutral.
Props and slops?
Sure.
I'm going to go ahead and throw out some huge props to Metagames Unlimited and everybody that turned out for the First Player Championship last weekend. It was a blast top to bottom from the beer tapping over at Galloway Station to the cookout. To both tournaments and so on. Great time was had by all. So,
did you ask every single person?
Did I ask? Them?
Yeah, you said by all. Like, what if one person was just really sad? Mm.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That's what I get for hyperbole.
Then their opinion doesn't matter to a prescriptivist.
Ooh. I mean, I guess we should probably prop Authority and American by David Foster Wallace, because I read it the other day, and then Luke's a literature geek too, so I made him read it, and we've been sort of talking about it all day. And by sort of, I mean that's literally all we've been doing. to the detriment of both of our
time. Basically.
So it's phenomenal if you are at all literature geek. It is free online, just Google Authority and American Usage. It's a Harvard link that is the free PDF, so you'll know when you see it. It's great.
Props to Literary Theory and Theory Wars and Usage Wars? Or slops to those things, I can't tell.
I mean, depending on how annoying the listeners found it. That we kept doing it.
Yeah, it depends on your perspective, I suppose. Which side of the dialectic you follow.
Huh. Yeah, which ultimately makes you a descriptivist.
Yeah, well, I knew Will was going to groan at that one.
So
I just don't even know how to recover from this at this point.
I want to prop my stupid game. My stupid time filler game is Marvel Future Fight. It requires no thought, and it runs on auto 80% of the time. But
nice.
I like Marvel Superheroes because I'm a nerd, as you got from that last conversation. So it's really fun, and we're getting the X-Men next week, it looks like. So really
props to the novel I'm reading right now, Mudbound by Hilary Jordan. It's fantastic.
I don't know. I hear all Hillary's are losing.
Oh my god.
Ooh,
that
too soon.
Puts us safely in the danger zone.
I believe it does.
And does that close another chapter of the White Moon?
Oh, that closes it. Maybe the whole book at this point.
I will just quit the podcast.
Okay. Bye.
I feel like I'm just done with
bye,
this.
Bye, listeners.
Talk about literary theory, then you repeat it.
Thank you.